It's been 2 weeks since we have been together in this setting on a Wednesday, so I will just kind of give you a briefest of reviews. And if you're with us maybe for the first time, or the first time in a while, this maybe will catch you up. But we're just looking at, as it says, the first 7 days on your paper there. The first 7 days that there ever was. The first week. And in that first week, the Bible describes here in Genesis 1, and then there's more material, particularly putting the emphasis on the creation of man in chapter 2. But in these two chapters, we have God's account, God's record, if you will, of how everything began. Day 1, it tells us in verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And we talked that night, when we talked about that, about the fact that the dimensions of reality, the dimensions of the universe are all seen in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning. That's a designation of time. In the beginning, God created the heavens. That's a designation of space, a spatial reality. And in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There you have matter. It's a way of just describing that He speaks, He creates the basic constituent reality of this creation in which we inhabit. Then he begins in day 2 and day 3, and which we'll look at today, and then on into day 4 later. He does specific things, and he is building in a way that puts the spotlight, if you will, on what he's doing. There's something about taking your time or to observe the process. We understand that God could have just said, "Be done," and it's all done if he wanted to. If you believe that God is omniscient and omnipotent and eternal and transcendent, which the Bible teaches, he didn't have to take 6 days to make everything. But I think part of what he did, and I'm sure there's part of why he took 6 days to create everything, is a bit of a mystery, but I think he went a little bit slow so we could appreciate something of the process. We can slow down and think about different parts of it. Day 2, We see in this dividing, if you will, of the firmament and the waters above and the waters below. And by the way, we just kind of very obliquely hinted at it last time about you see this dividing. He divided the day from the night, the light from the dark. He divided the waters above from the waters beneath. On day 3, he's going to divide the dry land from the sea. And if you think about it, anything we study, anything we investigate, anything we're trying to figure out, that is a constituent part of it. We divide things in our minds. Okay, here's everything that falls into this category, and here's everything that falls into that category. Our whole lives are categorized. You go into the grocery store, the canned vegetables are in this section, right? And the meats are back there, and the potato chips are over there, and my big problem is they come in every once in a while and remodel the grocery store, and I can't find anything. Have you had that experience? Like, where did the beans and the corn go? And my life's all out of sync. But we categorize. So God is sort of, we say it this way, He's categorizing and dividing, and just to help us understand things a little better. And this is the order He went to went about it. So we're going to look at day 3 today, and actually it says session 3. That's a mistake. It's actually session 4 because we spent 2 days on day 1. But nonetheless, we're looking at the third day. And it begins in verse 9, this description. If you have a Bible handy, we're in Genesis 1, verse 9. Feel free to borrow one off the seat backs if you need to borrow a Bible. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. Up to this point, it appears that this globe, this planet, was completely water-covered. There is no dry land. We talked a little bit last time we were together that in this water, this solution, if you want to say it that way, were the minerals and the substances of which God is going to use in the further development of the planet. But He makes a division. He divides the waters from the dry land. He speaks, and suddenly dry land appears. Now, this is a significant step that that is mentioned other places in the Bible. It says that in verse 9, that the dry land did appear. Verse 10, God gives a description of it. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters He called seas. And God saw that it was good. By the way, that phrase is going to be oft repeated in this chapter. And so I want you to take notice whenever God just kind of stops and says, that's good. That's good. That's good. Because it is good. So you have the waters together. There's a couple verses, and I've got the verses listed on your sheet there, where he references this creation of land. And it seems in the rest of Scripture, I think I have a few ideas of why this is important. I'm sure I haven't got to the bottom of it yet. But this moment of the dry land appearing seems to be very significant in God's activity. It says in Psalm 102, verse 25, of old you, speaking of God, you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. Whenever you see that, the foundations of the earth, and you see that in various places of Scripture, I think he's talking about the dry land appearing, because there's places where it seems very closely tied to that. There's a verse that's found in Isaiah chapter 48 and verse 13, and again, the reference is there for you to have on your sheet. But in Isaiah chapter 48, verse 13, here's what God speaking in the first person says. Indeed, my hand has laid the foundation of the earth, and my right hand has stretched out the heavens. When I call to them, they stand up together. So you see a couple things in that Isaiah passage. It was done through God speaking. God speaks and things happen. Also, you see that there is this solid. You really can't have a foundation unless you have something solid to rest on. We all understand that. If you're building a building, you have to dig down and create a foundation or put something on a foundation, that which is solid. So the dry land appearing becomes the solid part that we can build upon and so forth. So you have on this day, you have dry land. Now there's a couple other things we'll look at in just a moment. But I want us just to stop and appreciate. Sometimes we just need to stop and look. I love it when you're around little children because they look at the world a lot different than we do. Whether it's your children or grandchildren or other people's children that you've borrowed for a while. But you know, little children, they'll come along and there's a dandelion in the yard. What do we usually do when we see a dandelion in the yard? And we go get the weed killer. We're going to, you know, or we're going to dig it up or whatever. We just don't want dandelions in the yard. What's a child do when they see a dandelion? They'll stop and they'll experience the beauty of it. And I know some of you are going to say dandelions are not beautiful. They're hated pests and you got to get rid of them. But they'll pick it and they'll cherish it and give it to mom or whatever because they stop and look at this marvelous thing that mankind could not reproduce as a living thing ever. So we just need to stop and look at this. So I don't know about you, but dry land is a really good thing. God has created a solid foundation for us. I don't know if you're ready to go out digging in the dirt. I know we have some gardeners among us. I was talking to one of our gardeners here in the church, and I asked him recently, I said, are you ready just to get out and start tilling and digging and planting? He said, I've already got seeds started all over the house. And he says, I start everything from seeds, and I get it growing, and he puts it out. So some of you want to get, next time you get your hands in the dirt, stop and just think of what a wonderful thing God made for you. Next time you have someone run through your house and leave in muddy footprints, mama, be thankful that God created a foundation for us to walk on. It's a gift. It's a precious gift. If it weren't for soil, if it wasn't for foundation, we couldn't live. I mean, how long can you tread water? It's a good thing to have some dry land, isn't it? I know some of you like to go to the ocean every summer and splash around and swim around in it and dodge the sharks that are swimming off the shore and all that stuff, but the dry land. So now he talks about something else that probably is a little nearer and dearer to our heart. Verse 11, then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was what? Good. So he sums up in two verses, and on one day, actually I think we could say it this way, just during a portion of one day, God speaks and suddenly this world is absolutely bursting with plant life. Now notice, there's again some divisions to help us understand. He sort of makes a division between, and this wouldn't be how, if you go to a class on in biology, botany, we've made things very complicated how we classify things, but it's very simple classifications. Sort of the grasses and the fruit trees, okay, if you want to say it that way. The trees that produce fruit and the grass that produces seed, the grains and, you know, wheat and corn and all that sort of thing. And so it's just a very basic, simple division, but God made all of that. Now, the experts in Washington tell us that you should eat 8 servings of fruit every day. How did you do today? Did you get your 8 servings of fruit? Did anyone get 4 servings of fruit? Did anybody eat any fruit today whatsoever? Okay, I was about ready to go over to Foodland and just get a basket and pass it around. You guys, you're not going to make it till midnight unless you get some fruit in you. So what did you eat today? What kind of fruit did you eat today? Who had a banana today? Who had an apple today? Who had some strawberries today? Ah, strawberries are in, aren't they? Okay. Did anyone eat some like really weird fruit that no one's ever heard of or anything? A lemon plum. I've never heard of such a thing. Is it like a plum or a lemon? Whatever lemon plum is, stay away from them because they're bad. They're just really bad. Okay, it looked like a lemon. Okay. At least it looked good, right? It looked good. It just didn't taste good. Just think about this. Now, you remember in the wilderness during the Exodus? You remember what they ate every day for 40 years? Now, manna was good stuff. It had everything in it to keep you alive and keep you healthy, keep you going. You didn't have to cook it. You didn't have to store it. You didn't have to refrigerate it. You didn't have to grow it. You didn't have to buy it. You just went out and you just gathered it up and ate it. So it was really good stuff. But do you remember what happened after a while, what people thought about manna? They got a little bored with it. They got a little ungrateful about it. And so, this is not a good thing. But do you ever just think about the wonderful variety that God... I mean, God could have just made one thing for us to eat, and that's all we ever eat. Do you ever think about a cow? I mean, what do they eat? They eat grass and maybe some grain. And back when they used to have grain-fed cows, when they used to fatten them up, now they're all organic cows, right? They've made them... Now we don't have organic cows. But, you know, you think... How little a cow eats. We have an abundance of things to eat. Grains and all the stuff we can make out of it. And you can have it with gluten or not. And you can have whatever works for you. And so next time you go to eat, I had some strawberry jam on a biscuit this morning. Does that count? I had the grain and the fruit. I was being very biblical with my breakfast this morning. I had both kinds of that. And so give thanks. But also there's something else here that's a little bit interesting. He talks about the seed, okay? And God called, verse 11, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields its seed, and the fruit tree that yields its fruit after its kind, whose seed is in itself. Isn't that kind of a strange kind of phrase? Whose seed is in itself. And this is now we know about this because we've studied such things and we've been taught such things. But the plant within itself has the ability to reproduce itself. Okay? And you understand how pollination works and all that. You studied all that. But God built into this system not just all these plants that live one generation and die, but all these plants that can reproduce themselves and produce more of them. Sometimes they're producing dandelions in your yard, but they reproduce. And within that seed, you ever just think of a little seed. Think of an acorn that falls off of a tree, or a sunflower seed, or just some little seed. In that little package is all of the code that under the right conditions can make a huge tree or a large plant. Just this little tiny package of a genetic code containing the DNA of that plant so that it can reproduce itself. And that's really what God is talking about when it says the seed is within itself. I mean, God created a wonderful thing. There's nothing that mankind has made as, you know, we think, oh, we've made machines that travel and machines that can do great work and machines of great power. And I think machines are fascinating. But wouldn't it be nice if you had a car that every time it broke, it fixed itself? We'd close down all the garage and all the shops and all that. But, I mean, you get a, you know, someone at the store opens the door and puts a dent in your door. Suddenly, it just goes out and it just heals. Or your kids need a car because they're coming along and they've got jobs of their own. And what if your car just had a baby car? Wouldn't that be nice? I know that's silly to say that. But this is what God created. He created life that reproduces itself. And we just go, but God made for us a wonderful creation. Some of you love plants. I'm going to tell one of my wife. I've lost track of how many plants are growing in our house. Lots of them. And she likes different kinds of plants. Over the last few years, we've got plants in our house that I never knew existed. Plants that do strange things when they grow. And this time of year, it's really nice because some of them are starting to bloom and, you know, sort of come out of their semi-dormant season. And I just like to go home because I get lots of oxygen this way because all these plants are, you know, don't light a match in our house because it, there might be too much oxygen. I don't know. But we enjoy it. It's just fun. But what a wonderful, wonderful thing God has given us. He's not quite done. This will add something. This is the first time you see this. It says God created the herbs and the grass and the trees and all that. You don't have dirt, and on day three, God went out and scattered seed in the dirt. About the only thing we grow in a garden anymore. We've tried a lot of things and failed, but we do grow some half-runner green beans in a little patch right off the back patio. And the last couple of years, our granddaughters have been home when we planted, so we let them go out and drop the seeds in the rows and all that. And, you know, it's fun and see them come up and all that. But that's not what happened on day three. God wasn't planting seed. God speaks, and it's the full-blown thing. Now, if you see a big oak tree there, and if on day three, at the end of the day, you went over and cut it down, how many rings do you think you'd see inside of it? I don't know the answer to this question, okay? But I'd say that to say this. If you looked at it externally, it might look like a 50-year-old tree. It might look like a 100-year-old tree. It might look like a 400-year-old tree. Because things were created with maturity. It wasn't God scattered seed in the ground. He created living trees in full productivity. One of the arguments we have of a literal view of creation is, oh, no. There's not enough time in a week because things are so old. Because if you start looking at things look old, really old. Just drop this little hint into our thinking. We'll talk more about this later. But on day three, there were things on the planet that looked older than they really were, of necessity. So the fact that things appear to be old does not mean they're necessarily old. It might just be that they appear to be old. Go a few days later, when God made Adam and Eve, they weren't four-year-old toddlers. They weren't babies lying on the ground that couldn't take care of themselves. They were created with, at some level, of maturity. I don't know if you looked at Adam and Eve, I don't know if you'd say, well, they look about 30, they look about 25, they look about, I don't know what the prime age is. It's somewhere younger than me. That's all I know. It's whatever the prime age is. But they would have looked like they had been around a few years, a few decades probably. So things, by necessity, in a literal creation, appear older than they are. Just tuck that away because that's one of the arguments that is out there against how can these things be. We'll talk more about that when we come to day four. Next day, where the sun and the moon and the stars and all that out there was created, okay? But just that's a good point to put it. So it was good. I've already talked about some of the practical points, and just enjoy, to take good care of. Sometimes we should be rightly saddened that mankind has not done a better job of being good stewards of this world. We shouldn't just exploit everything and cut everything down and kill everything. And I think it's a good thing to try to preserve the diversity and preserve animals. And you can take anything to an extreme. But part of why we try to treat this creation with some level of respect is because God created it. But God also expects us to use it appropriately, not being exploiting to the point of damaging it, but he expected us to use it for the betterment of mankind. If you look over your head here, there's a whole lot of wood over your head here. It's up there. It's beautiful. It's been there for a long period of time, plus 50 years. And the great thing about wood is you can harvest it, and it grows back in the forest. So we can use it for the betterment of mankind, but we shouldn't abuse it. There's just that finding that balance where we appreciate what God has done. We don't worship the creation. We can use the creation for the betterment of mankind. And I'm glad we have a roof over our heads. I'm glad, you know, that doesn't rain on us on a rainy day. So there's that balance. Let's look at this word kinds. This is another important thing just to note in this text. It says in verse 11, God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind." He uses that same phrase again in verse 12. This is very important, and this, by the way, also leads, not that I think most of us need this, but it leads us to see the reasonableness of believing there's a creator God and it's created as he describes it. There is a boundary in all of the created order of living things. In other words, you have an apple tree, you plant apple seeds in the ground, you know what you're going to get? You're not going to get a lemon plum out of it. That's not going to work. I don't know where lemon plums come from, but they reproduce after their kind. Now, that's very simplistic. Now we'll talk about animals when we get over to day 5, but the same thing. He uses that same terminology, after its kind. Anyone have a dog here that lives with you? What kind of dog you got? A miniature schnauzer. What kind of dog does someone else have? A pug. A poodle. A poodle, a pug, and a schnauzer. I'm going to have a great vocabulary before the end of the day. What kind of dog do we have over here? A peek-a-poo. Now that is, what did you say? Now, the cement, you could take the peek-a-poo and the schnauzer, you could take a lady peek-a-poo and a male schnauzer, and they could have puppies, right? And you could take whatever, the schnauzer-poo that we now have, and you could have puppies with the pug, and you could have a pug-a-schnauzer-poo, right? But you know what you have when you're all said and done? You have a dog. You don't have a cat. You don't have a new species. There's great variety within a species. Look at your dogs. And they've been carefully selected and to make those traits over multiple generations, to have a pug with a little, looks like he ran into the back of a car that he was chasing that wasn't moving and that kind of thing. But they're still dogs. Evolution says that the kinds have to change into new kinds for evolution to take place, right? And we all grew up with, you know, seeing the little whatever crawled out on the beach, and, you know, the fish, and crawled out on the fish, and becomes a mammal, and becomes all these things, and eventually have all these humpback people to come up to us, and we're now riding erect until computers come along, and now we're all humped over again, right? But that just doesn't work, because there's a fixedness of kinds. And you might say, well, with mutations and multiple generations and whatever, if you have half an honest opinion or an open mind, the data of evolution, you don't see all those transitional forms. You should see, you know, between a bird and whatever comes after the birds, I don't know, but you should see all kind of, but you just see birds. And you can go back in the fossil record. I have on my bookcase a fossil fish that was dug out of the rock in Wyoming. It was given to me. I didn't actually dig it out of the rock. I wish I had it. It would have been fun. But this, you know, if you ask a scientist, this is millions of years old. This goes back to the paleo whatever era. But you know what? If I showed it to you right now, you'd say, "What is this?" You'd say, "It's a fish." It doesn't look too much different than a fish you could go down and catch out of the Elk River right now. It's just a fish. It's not half fish and half lizard. It's not a fish that has feet on it rather than fins. It's just a fish. You don't see the intermediate. So the fact is, God programmed into the code a certain limit of kinds. Now, you can have all kinds of variety of apples that could be selectively, you know, with selective reproduction, and I'm glad we do. You can get your Granny Smiths, you can get your Golden Delicious, you can get those apples that come with caramel all over them. You know, you can get whatever kind of apple that you want to grow, but they're still apples. Got that? That's important for us to just remember. All right. So there are horizontal variations. That would be this way. That's, you know, all different kinds of dogs, but not vertical variations. Do you have your hand up, sir? Go right ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And most mutations are decidedly bad. In fact, I would almost say universally bad. You know, we've all experienced, you know, animals or whatever, that this one was born blind or this one was born with some genetic defect, and, you know, it's sad, it's terrible. But those mutations, those changes, those where things go haywire, usually do not produce something that's very good. In fact, even within the kinds, most changes are not particularly helpful for the animal. In other words, if you took your peek-a-poo and dropped him down in the middle of Alaska in with all the wolves, do you think he'd make it very long? One of you is voting for this and one of you is voting against this, I can see. But the fact that animal has been selectively bred to be cute, and they're not very big, are they? They're kind of small and adorable, and they can get up on your lap and whatever they do, lick your face when you come home rich and all that stuff. Aw. But in the natural order, out in the wild, not good. It wouldn't work well. So even our fiddling around within the varieties, it really doesn't make the species stronger in a survival kind of mode, that sort of thing. So, but God has determined both this reproductive ability and this limit upon which there is not variation. It's for the preservation and for the life and the order within life. Okay. I mean, if species could transfer from one species to the other, can you imagine what kind of monsters might be walking the planet? Can you imagine? I mean, you could let your mind go wild, okay? So, but God has done great things. So we need to be thankful. So if you have a little, be kind to the peek-a-poo. Go pet it on the head. God made that for your benefit. And your pug and your schnauzer and whatever. But one more thing that I just confronted. I love going to a zoo. It's been a while, long time, probably 4 or 5 years since we've been to a zoo. But we actually went to a zoo and aquarium in Dallas a few years ago. And I just love going to all those displays. I'm just like, what kind of mind could create this? And look at the variety over here. And look at this kind of bird here and this kind of fish there. They had one of those things, maybe you've been in an aquarium, where you kind of walk through this tunnel and there's glass like arching over you, and it's a shark tank. Okay, so there's sharks here, and then you look up and the shark will swim over you, and I guess it's as close as I ever want to get to a shark, okay? But just to see all the variety of what God has made. God is endless in his ability to imagine. Now, obviously, he's created a finite number of species, but the variety is just amazing that he created. And there's a few animals out there that it just appears as if God has a good sense of humor, or he wants to fascinate us, or he wants to put together. Now, one last thing. You understand, without animals, plants are in trouble. And without, which way did I say it? Without plants, animals in trouble. And without animals, plants are in trouble. I want to make sure I say it that way. Because God created this great system to recycle the atmosphere. All right? If we're not breathing out carbon dioxide, the plants soon are going to get in trouble. And the fact that plants, through photosynthesis, take that carbon dioxide and kick out oxygen is a good thing for all of us air-breathing things. Now, either God created it all at the same time to get that cycle going, or just somehow by chance, a few plants, a few animals evolved, and then a few animals and a few plants evolved. And it just so happened that this whole system of recycling the atmosphere, I mean, if you had a bad year and a famine or a drought and all the plants died off, how long are the animals going to survive? Not long. The fact is, God created this system to recycle what we, every breath we take, we're the beneficiaries of, just for to keep it going and to bless us. Because God knew what he was up to, and on day five, he was going to scoop together a handful of dust, and he was going to make Adam. And when Adam is fully formed and breathes into him the breath of life, made in the image of God, he's going to step into a world that is already cycling and perfect. The food is there. The air is there. The water is there. The atmosphere, the temperature, everything. Just to step into a perfect environment for our benefit. And we still are the beneficiaries of that today. But also flash forward. With the imperfections of this creation, we've talked about it in recent days. We talked about it when we were talking about God energizing the creation. And that is simply this. God is going to set us into a perfect paradise someday if you're a believer in Christ. Perfectly prepared. Jesus said this. He said, I'm going away, and I'm going to prepare a place for you. God created everything that we know exists in this universe in 6 days. Christ, it appears that this is an ongoing, whatever that means, an ongoing exercise of preparing a place for us. You ever feel like you're not very loved? You ever feel like everybody ignores you? You ever feel like we're insignificant, not that big a deal? Jesus has been getting ready a long time for you to show up in his house. If God can make this universe in 6 days, what things might he have prepared for his own children when we step across the threshold into his presence? And for some of us, several people are going to pray for tonight. Recently have lost loved ones and you know, have passed away. I don't know about you, but that should just give you some sort of comfort just to remember that those that die in the Lord step into a place that Jesus has been preparing and building. A perfect environment, a perfect experience, a perfect place without pain, tears, trials, sin. And he's preparing that for us, and he's prepared it for our loved ones. So I hope that encourages you tonight.